Friends, you know that I am all about simplifying and systematizing your business, but I'm also about taking risks and experimenting within your business, particularly this year. And when we do run these experiments, sometimes we have to adjust our thinking and our normal processes to make it happen. And that's what we're talking about today. Taking risks, experimenting, and releasing a new product category during an off-cycle season. So today's interview is with Allison O'Connor of Rust Belt Love, and frankly, it's your permission slip to lean into the things that you're excited about, even when it doesn't feel like the timing is right. Allison is an advisory board member, and I invited her on today because she recently launched a brand new tabletop collection. So think paper placemats, napkin rings, and table tents, and these are available now just in time for the holiday season. We talk about where her inspiration for this collection came from, what it took to get this product to market, the logistics of quickly launching and what that was like. We talk about the easy things and the more difficult parts of this process and the perks of her having manufacturing in-house. She actually talked a lot about her manufacturing processes and how this has changed over her 15-year career in this business. And so if you're just getting started, this is going to be really enlightening for you to hear how they've done things both in-house and also outsourced. So definitely make sure to listen through. Allison also reflects in this episode on her 15 years in business, the evolving landscape of wholesale, the pricing and margin challenges that are unique to this season, and the importance of staying agile, especially during uncertain times like we're in right now. Now, before we jump in, today's episode is brought to you by our Proof to Product Resource Library. This is where you can get your hands on a lot of free workshops and handouts and guides and all sorts of good stuff to move your business forward, and you get to do it at your own pace and in your own way. So you can get access to that at prooftoproduct.com/resources. That's prooftoproduct.com/resources. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Hey, Allison, welcome back to Proof to Product.
Hey, Katie, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be back.
For our listeners here, Allison and I talk almost daily on Voxer, and so it feels a little strange for us to be like turning on the mics and hitting record because it feels a little more like, oh, we better button up what we say, but really, we've got a lot of good stuff that we want to talk about today. I should share that last time Allison was on the show was episode 342. It was back in May 2024, and that's where Allison shared how she had pivoted away from custom wedding work in her business to really focus on the ready-made product line for wholesale, and she's done a ton there on that side of the business to grow the revenue and to create systems that make it really manageable moving forward. And today I kind of want to talk about a new piece of that ready-made product, your tabletop product line. Congrats on launching this.
Thank you so much. It was definitely like a labor of love, and it felt kind of rushed to me only because normally these things have like a long runway, but I came up with the idea sort of abruptly. And then you and I talked about, is it the wrong time? And we were like, you know, let's just do it.
Yeah. No, we threw all rules out the door and just like ran with it. But this is what I want to dig into. I want to dig into your inspiration for starting it, some of the logistics, and like also giving you kudos in the process of like how fast you moved on this, because you moved very quickly on this. So tell us, what inspired you to create this line of tabletop products?
So we were really thinking about the holidays, thinking about how our normal sort of promotion around holiday time is focused on gift wrap and gift bags and, of course, our holiday cards. And I kind of wanted to back it up more into like the fall. And I started thinking about Thanksgiving. And this year has been pretty wild for a lot of people. And just trying to bring those positive feelings of when people get to be together and make that feel really special in a way that was also accessible. So bring back to Thanksgiving and also tying in Christmas, but I wanted to have something where people could have like a collection of Thanksgiving dinner or Friendsgiving or even just like a gathering together where it felt very special.
I love that you decided to do this because I do think more than ever people are needing connection and that human bond to come together. And so you're right, the greeting cards and the gift wrap and all that stuff does create that connection with people. But to sit down at a table, to share a meal, to have conversations, and to do it in a setting that feels pretty and elevated, but yet accessible in price point, it's really special. And so I think this is a really unique thing that you're doing. And I love that you were quick to take your idea from concept to actual production on this. So you came up with the idea. You and I talked it through. You started with the placemats, and then you started adding both the napkin rings and the table tent cards, the place cards. How many SKUs did you end up doing for all of them?
We did a total of 6. So there's 3 that are sort of fall and 3 that are more winter holiday, but they're all really in the same family as far as color and style. So they really are interchangeable if people want. We have them where it's the same style for placemats, the napkin rings, and the place cards. But if you wanted a different style for the napkin rings, different style for the place cards, they all go together pretty nicely.
Yeah, you did a really nice job with that. The interchangeability of it makes it so that it's almost like you have more sets in the mix. What was the easiest part? Was it designing or was it the figuring out the logistics of the product? What was the easiest part?
Honestly, I think the production was much easier than I thought it was going to be. The drawing took a little longer. Our specific style, and I say our, like I'm not the only one drawing, but it does take longer than I think. So I think of an idea and then the drawing does take a good amount of time. So I'm glad that the production was so quickly because I wouldn't have been able to do it for this holiday season. But we chose a production method that we could do in-house, which was a huge deal for us. So I didn't have to spend a ton of time waiting for samples or testing different stocks because it was a lot of stuff that we had on hand and that we had done before.
Yeah. One of the reasons I think that you were able to move so quickly and also that this has been so successful so far is because you're manufacturing in-house. And I would love to kind of take a quick trip down memory lane with you and talk about how your manufacturing systems have evolved over the years. Because I know when you and I were talking offline, you were saying, yeah, I started my Etsy shop and was printing on my desktop printer at home. And that is so relatable. That's how I started. That's how a lot of our listeners, I'm sure, started too. And now you've gone through this evolution of where you've outsourced and you've done stuff in-house and a combination of the two. So can you kind of walk us through how the manufacturing process itself has played into the products that you create? And talk us through the different evolutions, the different phases of manufacturing. And then let's talk about, too, in that how that's affected what you've moved forward with producing, too.
Yeah. So this year is our 15th year in business. So we have quite a history over. Thank you. Like what we have insourced, what we've outsourced. Yeah, when we started, I think like a lot of people, we had a very nice inkjet, but desktop printer, and we would do everything like that in-house. And once we sort of leveled up to a more professional, wanted a something a little more professional looking, we actually went to like outsourcing everything. And I'm like, I don't want to cut cards one at a time anymore with an X-Acto blade. Like I want to get 50 or 100 or 200. And we moved then to outsourcing everything. And I said, I didn't want to have anything in-house. And we did that for a good while. And then we started to get frustrated with errors, things that just naturally happen, the timeline of it, the lack of control of not being able to create things in-house. And around that time was the same time that Nick, my husband and business partner, came on full-time. And he was like, I would love to take over the whole production aspect. And so that's when we got our letterpress printers and we had started letterpressing in-house. And we slowly really started bringing as much production as possible back in-house. And it works. I say we're like medium manufacturing. So we can do high quality, low quantity stuff here. And there is still some things that we outsource, but we have like 2 very large Zanti professional laser printers now. And he does all of the letterpressing on. We've got 3 or 4 letterpresses downstairs and the big electric paper cutters and things, or we can do stacks of it instead of one at a time. So that sort of thing makes it easier to launch something like this where I can print them in-house, we can cut them and make sure the quality is where we want it. Even things like we have an electric scorer, which makes the place cards very easy. I don't have to wait for that to go out and then come back. Mm-hmm. And that sort of thing, it's made us pretty agile when we want to launch something. Now, anything that we're doing in-house, like when I say like high quality, low quantity, like we don't launch anything without knowing that we could outsource it. If we had to, you know, we have key accounts that we work with. If they wanted something that, I don't want to do 20,000 placemats, but I have the contacts and the vendors in line where if we had to, we could do that pretty quickly.
Yeah. It feels like a really nice middle ground that you're able to do things in smaller runs, test batches, you know, experiment with product manufacturing in-house. But like you said, if something were to come along that was outside of your capacity, you'd have the ability to do that too. You know, I was thinking about like, so I wholly outsource. I did everything out. And so like my process of bringing a product to market was very different. And you've been through this too, because you have outsourced, where it was like, I spent so much time getting samples and getting pricing and running numbers. And that takes up a big chunk of time. And for something like this, where you came up with the idea not too long ago, and you're already running samples and taking photos of those samples and getting it on your website, like you really did expedite the process by having that luxury of printing in-house. So I think it's interesting, and I think it's helpful for all of us to hear that there are different timelines to getting a product to market based upon what your goals are, what you're trying to do, and also what your in-house manufacturing capabilities are. And so this is an advantage in this case for you to have that.
Yeah. And honestly, we go back and forth all the time of like the margins and the cost of doing something in-house versus outsourcing it. And it doesn't always make sense, but the level of control that we have, especially when launching a new product, mm-hmm. I think the hardest thing when you manufacture in-house is working in your own labor. Like it's so easy to be like, oh, I'm printing it myself. Like I don't have to pay that, but you do have to work that into the margins because
so many people overlook the labor price. Yes, absolutely. No, when you get the number back from an outside manufacturer, that's all inclusive, right? It's for the labor and the manufacturing. But yeah. Okay. So one of the easier parts was the manufacturing of this, like actually getting it done so that you could take it to market. What was one of the harder parts of bringing this tabletop line to life?
I would say the design, and I don't want to say like the hardest, but probably the most time consuming as far as like doing the drawing. And then the other thing is the margins. The other thing is the writing it down. Like you mentioned, we started in custom where it's almost entirely service-based. So like the margins have a lot more room in it. And the cost there is the time you're putting into it. With wholesale, the cost is down. The fact that I have to know that my envelopes cost 4.5 cents makes me crazy. Like, because that half a cent really does matter times 40,000.
Yes.
So it's really doing that. It's really drilling down into, well, the label's going to cost this many cents and the sleeve's going to cost this many cents. And that was probably the other thing that took the most amount of time. I would say it took almost as much time as doing the drawing. It was really like going through, finding out what each piece of paper divided by this much and the printing and then working in the labor.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing with wholesale too, right? Like you have a lot of times a number you want to hit and then you have to work back from that. Where when you're doing something, I feel like D2C or even with custom, it's like, well, this is the price, right? Like you add it up and it's like, this is what this costs. Where with wholesale, it's like, okay, we got to hit this number so that we're meeting industry standard and we're also putting a product out that people are going to want to, you know, equal value with what they're paying for it.
Yeah, a price point that they'll resonate with, but also a price point that brings you profits on every order that's going out the door. It is a tricky situation. Also, I just wanted to mention here, I didn't mean to discount that, like when you're manufacturing in-house, that you don't have to run all the numbers. You, of course, have to run numbers too.
Yeah.
I just feel like it's a different timeline because when you're in-house, you're doing your own number crunching. Whereas when you're working with an outside manufacturer, you're waiting for them to like run their numbers and send them back and then you're negotiating. And so that's just what I meant by the longer timeline there. So
no, and it makes sense. And there's some products that we only offer retail because we do that. Like I'll come up with an idea and I'm like, I love this. We can make it work. And then we do the numbers after the fact. And it's like, oh, those numbers don't work for wholesale.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought this up because we just finished up round 46 of Paper Camp. And there were so many people who were like, when we talk about pricing and your product line and everything, and they were getting really like they had eye-opening moments where they're like, oh, I don't know if I can sell this product to the wholesale market because the margins don't work. Yeah. And I think that's such an important realization that, like, it's okay to have some products that you only sell D2C, or, you know, if the margins don't work for wholesale, it's okay to not sell it to the wholesale market. I think there's a misconception that folks think they need to sell everything to both D2C and wholesale.
Yeah, I definitely thought, like, when we first started wholesale, like, I would have to do everything. And I was like, oh, I guess we just lose money on these products. And I think you were like, no, you just don't sell them wholesale.
No. We're not going to sell them over there if that's the case. Oh, I love that. Okay, going back to the tabletop collection, you mentioned on social media that you almost did not launch this collection.
Yes.
Okay, first off, what were the hesitations? And then what changed your mind?
So I came up with the idea in July. And I started working on the art there. And like I said, the art took much longer than I thought. And I realized I wasn't even going to be able to launch it until September. Mm-hmm. And it felt like it was too close to the holidays, especially to do it for wholesale. You know, in my head, I have my release schedule. And if I'm not releasing it in August, it shouldn't be for wholesale for the holidays. And I think you and I discussed it. And you were like, just do it. Like,
it's ready. We'll put it out there.
It's ready. And especially for it being like holiday and
it's timely.
Yeah. I didn't want to sit on it for another year. And I also was considering expanding on this product category. And you and I discussed, like, if we put it out now, we can see how it does. And then we can expand on it for the winter show season.
Exactly.
So when we're launching our January collection. I think now, because it has done well, we're going to do a line for Mother's Day and Easter and sort of like spring vibes. So
I love it.
Glad we did it.
I'm glad you did it too. I know that, like, and you're not the only one too. I mean, I'm talking to several folks in the advisory board who are like, I have these ideas. I've already designed them. Can I just launch them? And I'm like, yes, yes. Like, I know that's off of what we normally recommend with two releases a year and stuff. But like, if you have it ready to go and it's timely for the season, like, I'm so glad you just put it out there because it did give you immediate feedback on, okay, people are into this. And also you saw both on the wholesale side and direct to consumer side that people were into it. So, you know, you can experiment and play in these businesses and you don't have to follow all of the guidelines to a specific T if it doesn't make sense. So even if it's coming from me, guys, everyone listening. So,
and I feel like too, like, especially this year, like, people's buying schedules are different. Yep. People are buying much closer to the holiday this year. Like, I know there are some of our partners that, you know, are done with holiday. Like, they're not even buying anything else for this year, but we have a lot of other ones that are still bringing stuff in and they're ordering just much closer to the actual holiday than they may have in the past.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you. So it sounds like the catalyst for moving forward was kind of the conversations you and I had, you and Nick had, the advisory board had, like, you had with other friends and family, that you're like, okay, I don't have to let this, like, because you are so organized. You do your releases twice a year, like we talk about. We plan out marketing plans around those releases. And so I know it must have felt uncomfortable for you to be like, okay, this is ready, but it's not the season for it. But it's okay. It's okay to move forward with that. So
what's the worst that happens? Nobody orders it.
Exactly. Like, exactly, right?
That's where we were at.
I will say, for everyone listening who's like, well, I'm going to release everything whenever I want. Like, I do want you to be methodical about it. I do not want you releasing new things to wholesale every single month like some places are telling you to do. That's just not sustainable and it's going to burn you out so darn fast. But if there's something that just, you know, this is an exception to the rules, so to speak, and it worked out for you. So I'm happy for you on that one.
Thanks.
Okay. You mentioned earlier, and I was going to give you kudos on this now, but like 15 years in business is a huge accomplishment. It's a huge milestone. Congratulations to you, Nick.
Thank you so much. It's crazy.
Does it feel like 15 years?
No. Some ways, yes. And some ways, no. Like, I've realized, especially this year, like, this is pretty much what I've done my whole adult life. Like, I worked in agencies and things beforehand, but, you know, my daughter is 14 years old. So basically, like, you know, I've been growing a family and a business and all of this at the same time. And this is just kind of my whole life. So it feels really good. It's validating to see 15 years because it's been a lot of work.
Well, you know, most businesses don't make it past 5 years, right?
I do hear that.
Yeah. No, there's like legit stats like that. Most businesses don't make it, especially smaller businesses, don't make it past the 5-year mark. And so for you to like triple that is pretty impressive. And I will say that having worked alongside you for so long, I really attribute your success to your ability to pivot and shift when needed. I mean, you have shifted business models, you have shifted product line, you have shifted your go-to-market strategies, you've shifted the way you're doing internal operations and systems. Like, I know that the public can't necessarily see those things, you know, when you're talking about your growth and your success, but it is highly impressive what you have built, and I hope you know that.
Thank you so much. It's funny where it's like, with social media, you can kind of go back and see our business does look completely different now than it did, obviously, when we first started. But to see all those shifts that maybe like not everyone knew was happening, but like that we remember was going on behind the scenes, it's really interesting to see how many different things we've done.
Yeah.
How differently we've done them. So thank you for those very kind words.
Oh, of course.
It's not always felt very strategic.
Well, I don't think anyone feels 1,000% strategic, right? Like, I think we all feel like we're kind of hanging on by the seat of our pants, even me, you know? There's times where we feel really confident and really solid in what we're doing, and there's times where we're taking risks and we're like, I don't know how this is going to work out. But I think a key differentiator there is the ability to figure it out and to continue to pivot if needed and to also get back up. Like, if something doesn't work out, because I know you've had some things that haven't worked out quite the way you wanted. I feel the same way in my business. But you got back up and you tried something new again. So kudos to you on that. But I do think there is a fair amount of like invisible labor that happens behind the scenes that people don't recognize. And they don't necessarily need to, right? We want them to buy our products and understand our brand. But I think fellow business owners can relate to that because yes. There's so much they're doing behind the scenes.
And that's when it's so helpful to have like a community to talk to with it. Like, because it's so easy to feel like you're making like these huge mistakes or like you're ruining everything or that, you know, this is it, this is the end. And then you talk to people who have either gone through it or are going through it or kind of help you talk you through to the other side. And it really makes a huge difference.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, kind of in the same vein, what advice would you want to give to newer brands that are just starting out that are like, you know, maybe in those early, just starting to like 3-year range? What do you want to tell them?
Fail fast. I think is that the saying? There is a saying that goes with it where it's like, if I could go back and do anything, there are some things that I just held on to for so long because I was like, the perceived time investment you've made into something or like, I have to make this work. And if something's not working, just be willing to leave it behind. Be willing to pivot. Be willing to see it differently because I wasted quite a bit of time and money in the past on things that just were never going to happen.
Yeah. Well, you bring up a really good point of like the opportunity cost and the sunken, what do they call it? The sunken cost fallacy where it's like, I've already invested all this time and money into something. I can't let it go. I'll be a failure. You know, everyone will think I'm crazy or whatever. But in reality, they're just going to be excited for the next thing you're doing.
Yeah. And nobody cares as much as you do. Like nobody thinks as much about what you're doing as you do. And, you know, I'll look like this or it'll look like that. It won't.
And they're not following as closely as we think, too. No, they're not noticing when something doesn't go as planned or we change our minds on something. I've changed my mind on plenty of things. And, you know, it just is how we have to keep moving forward. What's next? So you're going to build out this tabletop line more, you think, for the January release?
I think the more emphasis we can put on making everyday things feel special, just the better we might all feel. Like, it feels good for me when I can take something that is an everyday thing or that, you know, feels mundane or feels like we're just going to move past it or go through the motions and bring something really special to it. And if I can do that, not just for the holidays, because I feel like, you know, people do focus on like Christmas dinner and Thanksgiving dinner. And, you know, we can do this on a Tuesday. Like, we can do this, you know, just with getting a bunch of friends together. And it doesn't have to be China and a homemade meal. It can literally be pizza. But if it feels special and we're seeing each other and remembering how much we need other people in our lives, like, that's kind of our whole business. So,
yeah. Elevated luxury and like knowing that you're bringing something special to the physical table here. I also want to like talk about the fact that you were really headstrong in a positive way, I say that, about making this an accessible product. Like, you wanted the price point to be something that wasn't an obstacle for people. You wanted to help bring a pretty table setting to anyone that wanted to celebrate. And like you're saying, like, for a Tuesday night, it doesn't have to be, you know, a special dinner. And so as you were kind of thinking through that, I mean, did you have to adjust materials used or the sizing of things to get your costs lower to make it that accessible price point? Like, I'm sure it went into thoughts like your packaging or any of these other things. Can you share a little more of that?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, it's something like our brand is a little higher on the luxury side. A lot of what we have is, you know, thought of as, I don't want to keep using the word luxury, but it's not necessarily like everyday things. And we have done some more gift items this year where I consider doing like a metal or a wooden or plastic napkin ring to go with the set. But I knew that would be at a higher price point. I knew it would, on one side of it, it might, you know, not make the whole package feel cohesive because it would kind of elevate it into another price level. Also, selfishly on our side, it's a whole lot easier to inventory and keep flat things. So yeah, there were a few different things that went into it, but we did want to keep it like, at the end of the day, you can, each of the pieces comes in a set of 12. So you can have a 12 person setting for right around $50. And that number was just in my head where like that felt very, it felt accessible. It felt like if I'm going to have a party, and even if it's six people, then I get two of those. So yeah, all of that was really in consideration when we were creating it. I had some ideas of doing like die cut things or making things like this. And it would have, again, raised the price to a point where I didn't want to, you know, not make it for everyone. And that's everyone in quotes. Not everyone wants this, but I'm happy where we landed, and everything was thought out very intentionally to be at the price point it is, at the size it is, at the ability to get it in people's hands.
Yeah. One of the other things that I like about you creating this collection is that it kind of opens some doors for you to talk to different types of end consumers for this. So, you know, event planners you'd worked with and before, you were able to leverage some of the relationships from your wedding days for those contacts, and, you know, reaching out to local restaurants and grocery stores and things like that. You've already worked with grocery stores in the past, but I felt like it kind of opened your eyes to, oh, okay, there's different segments here that I can tap into, or contacts and relationships that I already have that I can revisit and, you know, see where there might be partnerships. And so how, I know you're still in process with this as we're like talking it out, but like, did that feel kind of re-energizing too, to know that, you know, this is something that could aim at a wider audience of wholesale accounts?
Yeah, definitely. And that was one of our big goals this year, was sort of to work with a wider range of companies, be able to offer things that maybe, you know, not everyone wants to have greeting cards on a wall and things like that. We had big plans for a whole gift line this year that was, you know, manufactured overseas, and we had to kind of put a nix on that. So this was a way to still sort of reach those other markets, reach those other categories while still being able to make it, you know, domestically. But yeah, even being able to like reach out, like we're talking to, you know, some local restaurants that do like the pickup dinners, and, you know, people that we wouldn't normally be contacting about greeting cards, like we can reach them and be like, hey, is this something you'd be interested in? So that's been pretty cool.
It makes for a really nice add-on product for them too, for their customers. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, Allison, where can folks find you online if they want to check out the Tabletop Collection or they want to follow you on social? Where should they go?
We're pretty much everywhere at Rust Belt Love. We're here in Buffalo, New York, in the heart of the Rust Belt. So if you look that up, we're on Pinterest and Instagram and our website, and everything's pretty much there.
Yeah. And so just to be clear, these are available for wholesale now. They're also available for direct to consumer on your main website. Is that correct?
Yep. Yep.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited for you. I wanted to have you on the show today because I think, one, it's important to talk about the process and how you've shifted your processes over the years for this production stuff. But also, like, I really admire how you took an idea and you ran with it. And you didn't let, like, nerves or overthinking or it not being the right time to launch hold you back from putting this out in the world. And, you know, of course, there's caveats here. I'm going to add to different people that I'm like, this is a unique situation. But also, I think it's really important right now in the environment that we're in to be brave and to try new things. And, you know, I said this during the pandemic, but it's the perfect time to try things imperfectly, you know, and you're doing that and you're an example of that. And so I wanted to share more of that story with our listeners to hopefully inspire them to take action too. So thank you for being here. Thank you for doing all that you're doing and for sharing your story with us.
Thank you, Katie. You're such an inspiration. You're so supportive.
Oh, I appreciate you, Allison.
I love this conversation with Allison, and I hope you enjoyed hearing about how her manufacturing processes have changed over the years and how she's really leaning into experimentations with her product line. This episode is yet another reminder that slow, steady growth is the way to build a strong, sustainable product-based business. Allison has been in this business for 15 years, and they've experienced a lot of shifts and iterations, as one does in business. So anyhow, be sure to go follow Allison and check out her new line of tabletop goods. All of her links are in the show notes for easy access. If you found today's episode helpful, please share it with a friend or share a screenshot on social media, and you can tag me at ProofToProduct. I'd also appreciate it if you could leave us a 5-star rating and write a review. You can do that at ratethispodcast.com/PTP for ProofToProduct. That's ratethispodcast.com/PTP. Your ratings and reviews do shine a spotlight on our podcast and allow us to bring you top-notch guests who have stories and strategies that will help to improve your business. All right, thanks for hanging with me today. I'll be back next week with a new episode.